Oké, dames en heren. Graag wil ik jullie graag uitnodigen voor de paneldiscussie. Die is onder leiding van Jeroen. En, we zullen aan beide kanten weer microfoons zijn. Mochten jullie een vraag hebben of een opmerking en jullie willen mengen in de discussie, schroom dan niet om je hand op te steken. Dan komt de microfoon vanzelf je kant op. Ja, dank jullie wel.
Hi, the panel will be in English because we have our foreign visitor again. Well, everybody understands English, so it's no problem, Amelia. I think everybody has already been introduced except Walter. So I'm not sure if Walter wants to say something about himself or...
Fine. By day, I'm an IT lawyer, bit of a competitor to Arnoud. And I am also a participant in this hackerspace. And every once in a while, I do some frontier stuff for Vrijschrift and ADRI, which are digital rights groups, such similar to BOF.
Yeah, so I think we can just go to the first statement. We use the statements of the first presentation, where we ask everybody, "What do you agree? Do you disagree?" Well, the first statement was, is distributed denial of service attack ethical? So I'm not sure who wants to start with this. Anyone? Hans? Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, ethical is the wrong question, I think, because ethical is just trying to find out whether it's a positive thing or a negative thing. Is a DDoS a good or a proper way to make a statement? If that is the question, then I would say no.
Yeah, I think that's really the question. Is a DDoS attack, is it a good thing, a bad thing? Or maybe it depends on what gets DDoSed?
No, I don't think it depends on what gets DDoSed. The attack in itself is the wrong way of doing things. Basically, it bounces back to you. So there is no positive effect.
Amelia, you had some different opinion in your presentation, I think.
I actually completely disagree with that. I have never seen a debate about the internet or like activism, even like with the hacker community or with activist communities in general. I have never seen the debate going as strongly for the last week or
yes,
few weeks as I've seen now.
But that is the debate on whether or not a DDoS is a proper way of doing things.
That doesn't matter at all. It's a debate.
No.
Like it's internet issues being discussed and an internet protest being discussed, even in like mainstream media. Now you can sit around and like, I don't mind people hacking away at stuff. It's just that I've been seeing, or as far as I can determine from history, that's what people's been doing for 30 years, and they've never managed to create the mainstream debate.
Okay.
And the effect of that is that the European Parliament is now considering blocking internet pages to get rid of child pornography. And maybe this type of protest, when you have a mass movement that's actually making itself heard, we can actually create a debate around that, like maybe we should do something different.
Do you think that in the end, the political solution to this is a positive thing or a negative thing? I personally think it will go negatively.
I think that it very much depends on how everyone reacts to it. Like, I don't think that it should be unconditionally supported. This is like the type of mass action that works, you know, maybe once, but just like a general strike. If this happened all the time, people would just get seriously pissed off, and with good reason. If it happens like once or twice or over a week, it's not that big of a deal. It can create a constructive debate. And I think if you're worried about politicians doing bad things with the internet, I am perfectly aware that politicians are very likely and love to do that with or without DDoS. I have a very difficult time seeing that this could end up on the minus side, but I can see it end up on the plus side.
Walter?
I would say that a DDoS almost inherently suppresses the flow of information, and from a humanistic viewpoint, therefore suppresses freedom of expression, and it also violates a hacker ethic, which is also freedom of information. Having said that, no rules are absolute, and I'm kind of sensitive to Amelia's statement. Well, this is a statement as such, and it was tit for that. I still would say that DDoS attacks are inherently questionable from an ethical viewpoint. And if anything, if this particular example of DDoS attacks was wrong or right, etc., I'm not sure about that. But if anything, it has outlived its usefulness. So by now, it is wrong.
Okay. I don't know if Brenno, well, do you have anything to add?
Not that much. What I said in my presentation already, I think it's a very ineffective way. It makes a hacker look bad, which I really resent. And I really, really would love to see people to spend that time do activism in a very effective way. Currently, hackers and freedom of information is under attack, and we don't have the luxury of playing around with these type of things. And it ends. It's illegal in the Netherlands, and that basically means that they are going to disrupt activism by putting you in jail, and that's not helpful.
I don't know if there's anyone in the public who wants to add something to this.
A friend of mine is moderator on a forum, and he got the question of one of the members. Can I create a script to DDoS a child porn website? Would that be ethical?
That's now you're looking at me, so I guess you're asking me. But I wasn't really just now talking ethical. It can be ethical to stop child pornography if you think that's a bad thing. I do think it's a very bad thing, so it can be ethical. But then again, it would be very, very ineffective because you only stop it for so long. But that would be a whole different situation. But that would really, really also be very ineffective.
But if your child is on that site and you...
Okay. If I don't have a child, but suppose that I had a child and it would be on that site, then I can take it down for an X amount of minutes, and then we're back at the same situation. As soon as my internet connection drops, the child pornography is still there. So it's ineffective. It just doesn't work. By the way, if you can find it, a whole bunch, if you want to DDoS it, and you can find a whole bunch of people, I would find the police and, you know, go after the bastards. But that
And let me add to that.
Amelia was first.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would say it's almost as thoughtless and ineffective, or even more ineffective than the current proposals for mandatory child pornography blocking or filtering, which are going around in Brussels right now, because as Brenno said, it's only temporary. Recently, the Danish blacklist was researched by a German researcher, and about 94 domains, less than four of them still were carrying child pornography, and he managed to get three of them offline within an hour by just sending a notice to the hosting party. And he even managed to knock off a full domain from the internet by sending a notice to the domain registrar, which happened to be in India. And which gets me back to Arnaud's presentation. I think it's quite reasonable to say, what can I achieve with less disproportionate measures? And if you can actually achieve a lot more by getting this site entirely off the internet, and just not just temporarily, using legal means, I would say go that way. I think it's actually rather stupid to start having a denial of service only if that site is out of reach of the normal arm of the law. For example, if the site happened to be hosted in let's say Burma. I don't even know whether Burma responds to takedown notices or not. And you cannot manage to get it taken down through the normal ways. Well, okay, then a denial of service attack might be ethical.
Okay, Amira?
The European Union has in the Stockholm program already suggested a solution to that, which is blocking out entire IP ranges. So this is what I mean with you know, if you're looking for politicians wanting to destroy the internet, the DDoS attacks just aren't it. Now, I disagree with DDoSing being even worse than blocking, because a DDoS attack would at least show on some level that some young person or even somebody old actually considers this a problem. But I do agree that it's ineffective. Like, what you should obviously do is get the police to catch the criminals, which is what everyone has consistently been failing to do for 20 years.
Yeah, you might even see them looking at blocking and stuff. If you have a look at that, if you want to help pedophiles, that's the way to go. Because it's so ineffective, and it gives the feeling that you're fighting a problem so much that basically what you're doing is enabling pedophiles that can easily get around those type of filters, those type of blocking. So really, there's only one way, in my opinion, to fight child pornography, and that is to research it, to get the networks, take the networks down, go after the money, that type of stuff. And if you're too lazy to do that, then basically you are enabling child pornography. So, you know, stop wasting time on this bullshit.
I disagree, though, that it's a comparable situation with the DDoS attacks that have been occurring now. Like, these are a counter-reaction to other DDoS attacks, basically. Like, why isn't anyone discussing the other DDoS attacks,
I was today. I've been saying that if you research the one, you should also research the other, and we don't. Yeah. But if you want to be effective against MasterCard, against Visa card, I can be very simple. Make very explicit that it's very uncool to have something in your wallet called a Visa card or a MasterCard. And anybody that has it in their wallet should throw it out right now, because it's really dirty.
Yeah, and that's what's been helping the Palestinians for the last 20 years, and it's what helped that French woman who got arrested she was a French green, and she was making activism against Israel by putting lots of Israeli goods in a trolley, and was arrested for disturbing the public order. Also, considering all the people that have been blocking Coca-Cola, how much have they actually helped Colombian union workers? Not a lot. Blocking is boycotting is extremely inefficient. Also, a visa for me, I'm abroad, I live in Brussels, I come from Sweden. A visa card is basically the only way that I can actually access my money in Sweden, wherever I am. Like, what do you say?
Don't you have American Express?
But that's the same shit.
No, it's not.
I think the question is in DDoS, then practical, does it work? I mean, we're talking whether DDoS is good or bad, but...
Does it work for what? Creating attention? Almost certainly. Obviously, like, why else would we have it all over the media for 2 weeks? Now, the question is, what do you do with that media attention after it happens?
Okay, I think we can go to the next.
There's another question, which I think hasn't been asked so far. How come that we have, as a community, failed so far to mobilize the masses for more productive stuff? Let's say stuff like peer-to-peer networks, which allow you to share information anonymously. For example, the next WikiLeaks won't be on the web. It will probably be on some peer-to-peer infrastructure. So one of them is the productive side. And apparently, which Amelia already said, and I think she's right, there's a lot of anger. And Brenna also said that in his speech. And we haven't managed to channel that anger of people who are not hackers for politically productive ways, and that kind of ties into Amelia's question. Now we got attention, what do we do with it?
Would I disagree that...
Yes, somebody in the...
Well, okay, whatever.
In the public who wants to add something.
I was actually quite curious, we've got all this attention now, and going to a peer-to-peer network to create a new thing such as WikiLeaks, I think this is the best time to do it, and I was curious if people we are in front of us and the crowd are want to be attending on such a project. So if somebody wants to get me answers on those, I want to hear them.
Do you look like a hacker?
Of course. I know.
Dark blue, actually.
Like, I'm actually quite a happy consumer. I think this, like, ever since Yochai Benkler published The Wealth of Networks about how everyone's supposed to be prosumers and produce and consume stuff at the same time, that's a bit like, nah, you know, I'm perfectly happy just using Facebook and Twitter that somebody else coded, and, you know, I don't want to sit around running my own tracker. I really, like, it's not because I'm a nasty person. I do believe that I have quite good ethical grounds, but I'm just not interested in running those servers myself. And I'm sorry.
I think it's time to go to the next question. Does the government have to be ethical?
Well, yes. If they don't, who does?
No, I disagree with the question to begin with. The government, at the end of the day, is us, at least in a democratic society. And someone said every country gets the leaders it deserves. Well, we got Jan-Peter Balkenende, Italy got Berlusconi. Which one is worse? You can ask all sorts of questions about that, but there's a grain of truth in that. If you're wondering whether the government should be ethical, you're also wondering whether you yourself should be ethical.
So maybe the question should more be, should we be able to make sure that the government stays ethical or does it?
Yes,
you know, doing ethical things.
By exposing unethical things, and in that way, I'm still not completely decided whether the concept of WikiLeaks is a fundamentally right concept. But given the unnecessary classification of lots of information that should be public, it apparently became needed.
If you ask yourself whether the government has to be ethical, you appear like it has a choice. I think you ignore the dynamics of a government, which is basically to control its citizens, to gain control over its citizens, and gain more power. It's not that the people inside are really intending to do it, but that's just the way it works, and we're seeing it over and over again. And to think that the government has a choice to do otherwise would be would misrepresent the dynamics of the system, in my perspective. And that's why, as a people, you always need to distrust your government.
You have been called a communist earlier this week. I will call you an anarchist today. But you do have a point. There are lots of unintended consequences of personal dynamics, but it's just human nature. If not, corporations have the same things. They are not inherently evil. Humans are not inherently evil, but we all do some stuff which is not right, or sometimes outright evil. And I'm in favor of having a healthy skepticism towards government, but full distrust in the American way, I'm not comfortable with that either. Not much of a debate today, is it?
I think we should just go to the next question. It's maybe might provoke more debate. Citizens are allowed to have secrets, but governments aren't.
So if you're going to have a nation state and there's going to be other nation states, then those nation states may have to have secrets from one another, and that makes it difficult not to have secrets from the citizens. Otherwise, you get some strange situation in which one nation state might abuse its situation vis-a-vis other nations, which is exactly what we've seen happen in a lot of trade negotiations. So I'm kind of having mixed feelings about that. On the one hand, it's good to know if the government is misbehaving with respect to the people. On the other hand, it's also understandable that a nation state wants to protect itself against other nation states. So how do you balance that off? You could obviously abolish the nation state. That would be the most effective means of getting a completely transparent regime.
But not very feasible. I would say both are entitled to have secrets, but in the case of governments, the process in which is decided what should be kept secret should be at least accountable and, if possible, transparent.
until the moment that I agree on the statement given the but there are some things, a small amount of things that should be secret, but the thing is the balance is lost, and right now we've got a government in the Netherlands, where I'm from, where it's less transparent than the government in most Eastern European countries. So until we can't reach the level of Eastern European countries or Zimbabwe, I don't think this is right now the moment to expect us to disclose anything to that government that can't be transparent.
Nice one.
I don't know if there's anyone in the public who wants to say something about this.
I'd like to add another word to the phrase. What about corporations? Because some corporations, businesses, have even more power than governments of some countries. And then maybe a comical part from a Belgium. What about countries without governments?
Well, considering the corporations are more powerful than the nation states, who do you expect to enforce that? That's also why, like, WikiLeaks, like a couple of years back, used to have loads of company leaks in it. And that is so useful, like, when you get these leaks from corporations, because we basically have no idea what they're up to. And there's not really any way that we can touch them either. Like, you look at these large blobs of mega power, and how are we supposed to react to anything they do? Like, so I've been sitting thinking about these DDoS attacks against Visa or against whatever, like nation states, but the actual people in charge of our infrastructure and our communications are telcos, and we can't even DDoS them because they control the infrastructure and the bandwidth. Like, how do you deal with that? And they companies, they're evil. Like, they need to be done something about. But I have, like, I don't know how except with leaks. So if you work at Telefonica, could you please release their documents?
I think we can go to the...
I wouldn't say that corporations are evil, but they're full of flawed humans and end up being evil in practice every once in a while, or often. And corporations tend to have more influence on power. And I think transparency in government will help to disclose lots of stuff which is going on in governmental decision-making, which is being influenced by corporations. It's very interesting to see that some of the released cables from WikiLeaks show the extent of the influence of the American content industry lobbying on legislation in Europe about file sharing, about copyright, etc. And, let's expose stuff instead of DDoSing it.
Well, maybe so we can go to the next question, because we have more. Ethics are something personal.
Yes.
Yes.
No. Not at all. Unless you feel that, for example, murdering another person is an entirely personal issue, which does not in any way is a universal issue at all. The sanctity of life, and also you can discuss the extent of that sanctity, is something which transcends the personal level. Period.
Yeah. Breno disagrees, or
yeah.
Well, some people think it's even ethical to murder somebody. Somebody was calling in Canada for the assassination of Julian Assange, and he probably thinks he's being very ethical. So apparently, it is personal, and a lot of the Canadians and Americans agree. There have also already been made some songs about Julian getting assassinated. In the Middle East, it was kind of okay to call for the assassination of George Bush or other persons. So apparently that is, in their eyes, ethical.
It boils down to the question, do you think that values are can be universal or not?
It and is I not about values, it's about
it is
ethics.
It's a value. Ethics are a value thing. I mean...
Well, not in my ethical system.
I really think that's a pointless way of phrasing it. By the time you retreat to make everything personal. It's kind of a solipsism. I cannot really. It's not even worth debating. No,
but even we've got different ethical standards.
Yeah, but we do also have enough overlap to be able to function together in a society.
Yeah, but that's a not
question.
Yes, well, that exactly. That's not. We do have differences, and we do common things, and that's what we have common is what we call common values. And some of my ethics are definitely not yours, and some of your ethics are definitely not mine. And still, you're an okay guy.
Well, I'm not even sure about that.
In my ethical.
That's a bit less. If you believe that ethics are personal. Or kind of tied to a single person. You can also say that there is no way to treat different belief systems and no way to compare them with each other. And we all consider certain acts to be barbaric acts. If ethics is a personal thing, then waterboarding someone in Guantanamo Bay is a chiefly personal act of expressing your personal ethics, and there would be nothing wrong with that. Or likewise, treating certain ethnical groups and considering them worth of extermination.
It might have been legal, but then still people might have had ethical difficulties doing it.
Well, to Godwin, to the debate, fundamentally, Adolf Hitler thought he was improving the world.
Apparently he did, and a lot of people...
So it basically means that the discussion ends, or...
Yes.
Fair point.
If you apply Godwin's law correctly... Unless somebody else to add something, but I think he can just go to the next.
No.
Well, we're having this discussion today in front of most of the hacker society, the hacker community, and ethical standards for me are something personal. Like I'm vegan, and most people don't agree with. Okay, it's ethical for yourself, but not for me. But I actually do think that. There can be put a decent base on ethical values out of the hackers community or out of the Western world, and then I don't think murder is something ethical. And anyhow, that's like the thing I wanted to add to this discussion.
I think that you can see that ethics are personal, and the sole reason why I have this opinion is that there was collateral murder, which first happened by a large group of American soldiers, which probably has the ethic values of, well, this is okay. And now there is one soldier, Manning, sitting in jail for 5 months already, which had a different ethical value. So yes, I think that is the proof that ethics are personal.
Yeah, I share the values of Manning, by the way, because I don't think it's a good idea to start shooting journalists.
When you say ethics are a value judgment, you already say you're judging value, and you cannot objectively assign value. There's basically no philosophical method to do so. So when you say an ethical statement is a statement of value, you have already conceded to it being quote unquote subjective. Hence, it differs from person to person. Now, when you make statements like then we cannot condemn torture, for example, on ethical grounds, you can still state that it conflicts with your ethics and with the majority of people's ethics.
Well, like, why are you all assuming that people can't do stuff they consider inherently unethical? Like, most people don't think that it's ethical to steal, for instance. And with most people, I probably mean all of them. Like, we all don't like losing stuff that we feel attached to. Some people still steal, not perhaps because they consider it ethical, just because it was convenient or because it was available or because they needed to.
I think considering the time, you have to go to the next question, which is, the recent events changed the image of hacking.
Can I?
Yeah.
I think that is a gross exaggeration of the situation. At this point, it does change the image for a little bit, but I don't think this is permanently changing anything really. It only attracts attention to the fact that there is something called hackers. When we make magazines, you put in the word hack already because you know you sell like 10 or 20% more magazines. So I don't think this particular case changed a lot. What did change the world and permanently, but it has been ongoing for 4 years now, is the fact that WikiLeaks is out there doing their thing. That is changing the thing, but the world of hacking hasn't changed over a bunch of DDoSes that would make the boys that have been arrested a lot bigger than they are. What they did was naughty, and that's just about it. And they should get a slap on the wrist and sent home again, and that's the end of it.
So what I would like to hear what you have to say, because you were talking a lot about the history of hacking, and as far as I've been able to determine, it's...
This hasn't changed anything. It only attracts the media to talk about DDoS attacks, and therefore they don't what's the correct word for that? They are sidetracked basically from what's really important. So no, it doesn't change anything about hacking. The problem is that these kids made a just judgment error.
I don't know if there's anyone in the public who wants to add to it, or
no, I'd like to add something. I think the idea of the image of hacking is much more shaped by great film productions such as Hackers and War Games and well, that was sarcasm, by the way, for those who didn't get it, than by the current events at all.
Okay, I think it's time to go to the last question. The media give hackers a bad image.
The media doesn't understand what it is they are talking about. They say, or they label a kit that downloads a certain program from the internet and points them at a certain corporation as being a hacker, which is not true.
You don't think that holding an event like this, for instance, could give media the chance to report
a hacking?
That's
something completely different. The media should be around events like this, should be at events like HIP, like CCC Congress, like CCC Camp next year, and then the media will understand what it is to be a hacker.
Do you think that the DDoS attacks might make media more interested in finding out more?
No. It's just 2 weeks, and then the next thing is drawing attention from us.
To be honest, I think that this event today did a lot more in the perception of a lot of journalists than the entire attacks or anything at all. I've spoken to a bunch of them, and some of them have said, like, okay, now I understand what you do. And I think that that might actually be a lot more positive, and I fully agree that they should come to the events. A lot of journalists are actually trying, but they are totally clueless of what they're talking about. I was talking about the overchipkaart today to a journalist of the GPD-kranten. And at a certain point, I explained how you could have fun with it. And he went like, I did that. So I went like, well, then you're a hacker. Cool. You know, so you can do a lot there, but I don't think that the media is out there to give us a bad image. The spokespersons of corporations, the spokespersons of several government organizations, they are giving us a bad image. They are spinning the reality in a way that we don't like. And we don't have the money the money power to change that, but we've got the intelligence to.
What I'm interested in, and it's more a question to everybody here, what are hackers doing to profile themselves to the outside world? They are not visible to the outside world, and they're not standing on the bridges like, yes, we are hackers, yes, we try to get into systems that should be closed, but if you don't make yourself heard, or what kind of things do you use to make yourself heard? You use the media?
Well, we are here today. There was a press release. There are CCC. There are conferences ongoing. We do a lot of things to profile ourselves, and all of these events are turning journalists around. Yeah. All of them.
Okay.
I can add up something to that. We now have a wave of hackerspaces coming up all over the world. Days like this, with a very small group of 10 people, we can get together, I think, 100 hackers, and we have 50 listening right now to us. Mm-hmm. So hackers are actively working on our image, but we have to get the media here. We have to explain them what we are, what we're doing. And it's not like we are weird creatures or something, but we do something different than the rest of the world.
And we make radio stations at all the conferences. We do a lot, actually.
Yeah, but still the media isn't finding you. The big media, sure, in Holland, isn't really finding the hackers. If you look at several news sites, they're not really giving information or background information on what hackers are doing. Well, it's only the bad things you see, not really the good things.
It's not quite true, because, for example, the Telegraaf, the biggest morning paper in the Netherlands, visited this hackerspace and had a piece on it, which was relatively friendly, given that this paper is not very well known for being very nuanced, etc. So they did a reasonably good job on that.
But I think I've seen that article, and it looks more like, in the media, hackers or hacker spaces, they're more like, oh, this is a cute social clubs where teenage boys goes to hang out, and then they have their computers in their lap and everything is hunky-dory. Whereas what you're seeing is like kind of like this crowd is quite political. Like, you're quite political, aren't you? Like, you have very firm points of view about freedom of speech and all of these things that should be true in society. And that kind of view isn't really represented yet. So hackers are kind of seen as social creatures, but not political creatures.
Not in the Netherlands. Not in the Netherlands, because I think the hacker community in the Netherlands is not as much politically oriented than, for instance, in Germany. If you look at CCC and CCC congresses, they are very, very political active.
Which has a drawback, by the way.
Also.
Because CCC has this aura of being leftist, whereas many hacker values can easily translate across the whole of the political spectrum. And one of the things is, if even the Pope is saying copyright is going too far, I mean, how bloody conservative can you be? Well, you can be somewhat more conservative than the Pope, but it takes effort to be. By then, you have an ally in a rather unexpected place, the Vatican, which is not entirely a leftist place either. So I'm not very much in favor of being very political in the sense of aligning yourself with a political movement. I'm very much in favor, and that's why I like Bits of Freedom, that's also why I'm involved in Vrijschrift myself, in lobbying politicians, and hacktivists can do great jobs in that. There's, for example, this project going on, having a proper search engine for documents in the European Parliament and the European Commission. Hackers can be very helpful with that. I mean, when the software patents came up in 2005, some people wrote scripts in order to monitor all the schedules for the Dutch Parliament in order to prevent it being hidden away in an agenda of a different commission and to be able to act upon it. That kind of stuff. Ott is having a hackathon this evening on Closer to the Hague, their social media tool to get politicians more involved in these issues. So I would say, yes, hackers should be more involved in politics, but in a way that is not strictly aligned to a single or a group of political parties, because most of our issues do strike a chord across the spectrum, and if not for all of them, at least for some of them.
When you look at our hackers community in the Netherlands, you certainly will find out that there are the amount of people in the hacker community that are a member of a political party is pretty much high if you compare it to people who play soccer or basketball. Just this guy, and just to give that as a point of view, is you can get more information into the existing parties as a hacker here, because most of the parties don't have that much amount of members. Comparing to other countries, it's just 1% of the citizens is a member of a political party, even less than that.
I'm not really saying that hackers aren't political. On the contrary, I find the hacker community to be very, very political. They have like a lot of opinions about everything. But if you're concerned about the public image of hackers, hackers aren't really made out to be this political bunch, right? Like, you're not really reported about as being political, which is entirely different issues. Like, you can be political without being depicted as political.
Yeah, if you look at my Twitter account, I have the logo of the party I'm a member of and the European fraction that my party is in. And I'm told I'm a hacker on it. But considering you should have, it's a good culture to not force a hackers community to one point, but to go into different parties and present the points that you are seeing, because data and infrastructure is getting more important in politicals anyhow, and in the European Parliament, in every country, there's a lack of interest in politicians in sharing technology and how to work with it.
I am certainly not arguing with that. What I am saying is more that, well, so obviously, like, I have a better look at Sweden than I have at most other countries. But in Sweden, the way I perceive it is that the Swedish internet activist group Telecomics is in more contact with the government as an basically like non-affiliated group. They're not in any political party. They're just like this autonomous activist cluster, and they are in contact with media all the time. They're like the first people who get called whenever something happens about the internet. And like, this, to my knowledge, is well, Bits of Freedom isn't really a hacker community though. Like, it's more like a lobby. It's more like a lobby group. Like, it's a definite lobby group. It backs European Digital Rights Initiative. Telecomics is really just like this bunch of random individuals hanging out in an IRC channel, but they do get called by the media.
Okay.
Well, I think I don't want to comment on the specific distinction of Bits of Freedom being a lobby group or being something else. I think there's definitely, Telecomics is a very interesting example of how, as sort of a distributed group of concerned people, you can have an impact on politics and everybody who feels that Bits of Freedom is not doing a sufficiently good job. Please follow the image of or the example of Telecomics on that. I just wanted to give two considerations. First of all, you can be political by influencing policy, but in a society where code becomes law, you can also be political by coding. And I think that as hackers, people are already aware of this and are already doing it a lot, but you can do it more, and that's what that was part of my message in my earlier speech. The second thing I forgot, so I'll keep it to this.
Can
Well, again, like, it's not really about whether or not you're doing efficient work. Like, it's not about being political, like, if you are political or not, and it's not about whether or not you accomplish great things. Which, I mean, Bits of Freedom created European Digital Rights Initiative, right? Like, that was basically you that took the initiative for that. It's the best organization that ever happened for digital rights in Europe. That doesn't mean it's an kind of autonomous random cluster, which Telecomix is. It is an association with a board, with a, like, members and everything. So that's where I kind of make the distinction between that.
I don't know if it's really needed to make that distinction in such a way. Sweden is not the Netherlands, and the Netherlands is not Sweden. What I mean to say is you have a total different structure, a total different culture from our culture. The field where I'm very active in, like, for instance, FOIA. If you disagree with FOIA, you go to an ombudsman, I go to court. That is a total different system. You can't compare the two. And what I see in the Netherlands is a hacking community that was pretty much asleep, but after the turn of the century, you see it to be a very vibrant community, becoming very active and doing good things, but maybe in a somewhat different way. But I don't think that is failing, far from it. And I see actually a lot of support for Bits of Freedom coming out of the hacking community. I get a lot of support from the hacking community, myself, in my work, in my court cases, in all the things I do. So that does happen. People are very active, but it's not like that it always is as openly, but people are very supportive and very, very active. So
actually, it's not really attributed to hackers, though. Like, isn't it more like it's netizens or it's...
No, but that's culture.
Well, yes, but if we're discussing the image of hackers in the media, then you can't say that lots of individuals are engaged, because everyone is already acknowledging that. They're just not acknowledging that hackers are involved. And if it's the image of hackers you're concerned about...
No, but if you look at, for instance, the Over chip card, it is the hackers are hacking the card, and the mainstream media is basically saying, like, and that's a good thing that happened, because nobody takes it for serious no more. So, yeah, very good example. Yep. The action against voting machines.
I think we can conclude. I don't know if you want to say anything. It was the last question, so as
Well, I had one last question. I think it's very interesting that we had a lot of discussions today about, for example, DDoS and ethical hacking. What I also find quite interesting is that a lot of cables are released, and the media is reporting about DDoS attacks of 16-year-olds instead of Shell, who has some infiltration somewhere, and things like that. And I'm wondering, is this like a sort of smoke wall from the media, or why isn't the media focusing on looking through all the cables and finding new stories?
Well, let me answer this question, because I'm not of the media. The media is not in the job of informing you properly. It's in the job of generating page views, eyeballs, and attract advertiser revenues. Although in the case of the Dutch public television system, there is also this pretext of cultural diversity, which is not quite lived up to. And therefore, the story of the 16-year-old DDoSer is much easier to present and to generate eyeballs than the complex story of Shell having infiltrants in every relevant Nigerian government department. But let Brenno say something. He's from the media. He's here to help you.
You know, of course it generates page views and it helps, but that's the quick news. But the thing is that mainstream media is totally clueless on how to deal with WikiLeaks. They don't know. Investigative journalism in the Netherlands is close to death. You know, there is Argos that half of the shows is repeating stuff or is making it like normal programs, and the other half is really cool investigative journalism. Then we have got very political journalism from other programs, and then it's kind of hard at this point to find very good investigative journalism. It's also very hard to do because we've got the government working against us, and on the other hand we have money issues, and it's not a natural thing. Now all of a sudden here comes by WikiLeaks, and that is releasing documents that my competitor will have as well. And media are not used to dealing with and working together. I notice this every day in my job because I want to work together with my competitor. Because for some things are so complex, like ACTA, like the OV chip card and other stuff. And I can't, because a lot of people distrust you then because you're still the competitor. And the story is big enough to share. And you see only slowly that they're starting to learn that. Then there is also a part of smokescreen, definitely. Because if you attract all the attention on how bad these hackers are, you indeed don't have time on to think about how bad Shell is. Or you don't have time to think about that it's not normal that you start shooting at journalists or do other stuff. So everything surrounding WikiLeaks, the mystery and stuff around it, has been a disruption of regular journalism as well. But quick news should be like separated from regular investigative journalism and other stuff. We at Webwereld have made it a point to try and do find the IT stories in the cables. And we've done so. Only two stories so far. But they're cool stories. And actually, they've been read pretty well. So we are pretty satisfied about it. There are cables that are definitely currently under investigation, I can tell you. So we are trying to do our job. But then again, also my money, my time is limited. So I need help as well.
But like almost every example that I've heard here today of the cables are basically stuff that's been reported from mainstream media. So it's not like they haven't written anything. In many cases, the errors I find in mainstream media reporting are rather like lack of history. So in the Spanish media, it's been all over the place that, ooh, the government was in discussions with the American ambassador about copyright. And this is the exact same news that we've seen in Sweden. But considering both nations have been on the 301 lists of the US Trade Department for several years, it's not that weird. The 301 lists have been used for extortion of other nations, unilateral extortions by the US, trade sanctions, for 30 years. Of course you go into discussions about how to get your nation removed. Otherwise, they're going to put in trade sanctions that are going to make you feel very bad. Especially for Sweden, like we're basically dependent on two industries, two export industries. We can't export our things to the US. We're pretty much fucked.
True. No, true.
But it's like the 301 lists should be discussed there. Yeah. I think so.
Also, one thing maybe about the cables, maybe we should give it a little bit of time for media to get a hang of it and to get used to what's leaking. My suspicion is that we haven't seen the worst yet for the governments, and probably then we will have a lot more fun, and then people will start to raise questions on how are we doing business and how are we living. At this point, it's only the small fish. But we'll see. You know, it's hard to tell. I can tell you that the aggression of the Americans and the aggression of some other nations is not unfounded, because they are very nervous of what's yet to come and not what is behind us. So media needs to get some time there. And also WikiLeaks have been making a couple of mistakes. They are learning as well. And I think they are now on a pretty interesting course that will make big news. So yeah, it's a field day for me as a journalist.
The only reasonable explanation I have heard of the DDoS attacks against WikiLeaks is that somebody is trying to create an acceptance for cyber war by DDoS or by any other means. Because to me, the DDoS attacks are like against WikiLeaks, of course. They're completely nonsensical. Even I can think of a better strategy than that, and I'm by no means a hacker.
I think so, it's a nonsensical example of nonsensical explanation, because the nation most vulnerable to what is now called cyber attacks is the United States. My pet conspiracy theory, and as any conspiracy theory probably worthless, is that the Chinese, in China there's a complete blanket ban on any reporting about WikiLeaks. I mean, we've been talking about suppression of free speech by the United States in this process, and which I don't applaud whatsoever, but at least the American papers do to some extent report on it. The Chinese papers are completely banned to mention WikiLeaks to begin with. And the Chinese government does not have a completely blank history on the subject of cyber warfare.
The Chinese own the US, they own all their banks. If they attack the US, they will basically destroy one of their main source of revenues right now. There's no reason for them to do that.
So what's your point in talking about cyber warfare then?
Well, I don't know why somebody would want cyber warfare, but I would assume that it's because the nation states as geographical territories want to exert power over other geographical territories.
But you don't do that with cyber warfare. But that is
through WikiLeaks.
A completely different discussion, I think. So.
And could you take down China? Probably the interesting question.
Why would
or
you
could you
do
hurt?
That?
Well, if they own your banks, that would be a bad idea, yes.
But you can't take down China without men on the ground. That's
now the point I'm making.
I think that it's not really on topic anymore. So.
Thank you.
See, I don't know why you would make cyber warfare. Like, I don't know the strategy of anyone who would like to do that either. Like, I'm just saying that it's the best explanation I've heard so far, because anything else could be idiotic.
Yes.
So I think it probably ends the panel discussion. I'm not sure whether anyone from the panel still wants to say the last sentence or something like that.
I want an applause for cablesearch.org. It says a bunch of Dutch hackers will wrote a really nifty search engine for the cables.
Cables!
Okay. Thank you all for coming for today. I want to thank the panel, of course, and I have Rick here, and he also wants to thank some people in person. So,
well, I kan het wel Nederlands doen, denk ik, ondertussen weer. Een week geleden kwam er ergens op IRC een ideetje om dit vandaag op te starten. Ik wil eigenlijk iedereen, in het bijzonder de mensen die afgelopen week heel hard hebben gewerkt, zoals Koen, Jurt, wie hebben we nog meer allemaal gehad hier. Eigenlijk veel mensen die hartstikke hard hebben gewerkt. Icarus. Ook nog eens gezien, heel veel, ondanks dat hij ziek was. Bedanken voor deze dag. En ik hoop dat iedereen er wat van opgestoken heeft eigenlijk. En ik zou zeggen, we gaan een biertje doen.